Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here Wednesday, September the 8th, 2021, 9/8/21, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. And we have got a great hour of programming to kick off your morning this morning. What do people like to talk about better than the weather? Not many things at all. And something that has become a staple of people's living rooms, coffee tables, the internet, over many, many years is the Old Farmer's Almanac. And for many years now on this station, on this program, we have either had the editor or assistant editor on for about 45 minutes before we head into the seasons of the upcoming year. So that's what we're going to do this morning, as we always do. It's one of my favorite things to do. We are speaking this morning with the assistant editor of the 2022 Old Farmer's Almanac, Ben Kilbride. Ben, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me today.
Ben, this has become sort of a tradition for us, and I know a tradition for you guys. Why is the Old Farmer's Almanac still maintaining, still there, when so many magazines have went by the wayside in the last 20 years?
That's a good question, and it's definitely a competitive field out there right now. I think what's really kept the Almanac going is it's a combination of keeping the old and traditional information that we've always had in it for 230 years, as well as continuing to keep up with current trends, expanding on the internet. You know, we're on all social media platforms, and making sure that we have the most useful and entertaining information that we possibly can. And then, you know, we're only putting a fraction of the information that we have into the actual almanac itself, just to create a publication that has a good feel to it, that you can pick up and learn something new about any time of the day. And then anytime you need anything more, you can also go to our website at almanac.com.
There are a few almanacs out there, and if somebody wants the Old Farmer's Almanac, what is the quickest way to distinguish that from the other ones, other than the title?
So the easiest way to tell is our cover is a kind of a light yellow color, and it's been the same exact cover for the entire time of its publication. And right on the cover, you can see a little illustration of Benjamin Franklin and our founder, Robert B. Thomas.
Now, 2022, what time frame does this cover?
So this covers, at least for weather, it covers from November 2021, which is coming up in 2 months, all the way through October of 2022.
Now, when we look back to last year, how accurate was the 2021 Farmer's Almanac?
So with the weather, we were about 75% accurate with our forecast last year. And we have a page that we always dedicate to talking about our previous year's forecast for the winter, just because we want it to be transparent and we want to show that, you know, we're not all knowledgeable. We are making predictions here. But we do get quite a lot correct, and we always stick fairly close to our 80% accuracy rate.
What do you attribute that to?
I'd say what mainly keeps that going is our 230 years of previous predictions that we can look back on and really understand, you know, what we did right and what we did wrong. It's always a learning experience. And I'd say, you know, having all of those years of predictions means that, you know, if you want to learn what's going to be going on in the future, a good place to start is to look into the past to be able to make those predictions.
How is the weather compiled?
So the weather is compiled. We have a couple of different meteorologists a few different astronomers. you know, there's a lot of different information in the almanac from the tabular pages, which gives information about all the different star movements and, you know, the sun and sunrise, sunset, moonrise, moonset, all that kind of information. And then the actual weather predictions for the 18 regions of the United States. And that's all compiled about a year and a half in advance, which is, you know, pretty far considering, you know, the amount of information we put in here. They use a lot of different information from traditional, technology that we have these days, from using satellite information to weather models, as well as all of our own information that we've gathered throughout the years. And, I'd say that it's a treasure trove of information that you can get for all the different seasons.
A lot of people I know are very curious as to why we watch meteorologists on television. There is a weather page still printed in the newspaper, and they can maybe go out a week, sometimes 2 weeks, but that's about it. And a lot of times they're wrong when it comes to snowfall, rain, things of that nature, and they're only going out 2 weeks. How does the Old Farmer's Almanac go out more than a year and still have an accuracy of 75% to 80%?
Well, I'd say, first off, we have very good people on our staff. They have a lot of experience. And second, the difference, I think the main difference would be, so the meteorologist that you're looking at, for daily weather, for weekly or biweekly weather predictions, they're doing very, very specific information. So they're talking like, you know, in this hour, this specific hour of the day, you're going to be getting this kind of weather. And if you're getting that specific, weather changes very quickly and rapidly. But we give information on like a 2 to 3 day rolling basis. So if you look in, you want to look in like June, you would see like the 1st through the 3rd, it's going to be showers with a little bit of sun or something like that. So it's, I'd say, we have a little slightly less specific information for every single day, but because of that, we end up being a little bit more accurate because, you know, in that period, you will definitely experience a little bit of rain, you will definitely experience a little bit of sun.
Hmm. What is Ben Franklin's tie-in to the Old Farmer's Almanac?
So Ben Franklin is known as, like, the father of the almanac. He didn't create the almanac itself, the idea of an almanac, which is basically, it just means calendar of the heavens, which is pretty cool. But he is the inspiration for our founder, Robert B. Thomas, who created the almanac in 1792. Ben Franklin had created something, an almanac, years before. I believe it was called, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right this second, but he had created an almanac that had been around for a number of years before that, and I think Robert B. Thomas just wanted to take a stab at it, thought he could do better, and he's done pretty well considering how long our publication has been around for.
Almanac used to be a very common word in our vernacular, but for the kids coming up today, not so much. What is your definition of an almanac?
So like I said before, it's a calendar of the heavens, and it was, that's right, we did have a lot more use of that word years ago, particularly before the internet was around, and that's because, an almanac is basically just like a compendium of information that is useful for many different things. It can be a reference guide, it can be a weather predicting model, it can have, more generic information as well as like more specific information like gardening or sports history, food, different recipes in here. It's got all different kinds of things, but back in the day when this was first came out in 1792, everybody was a farmer. Basically, that's what you did to survive. You lived on your farm, you grew food, you managed your animals, and everybody had two books in their house. They had a Bible and they had an almanac. And what was so important about the almanac at the time was those weather predictions, because if you are planting your crops and it's going to rain the next day or for a week or something, you want to make sure you get all the crops in on the before that happens, or when the frosts are going to be. It's very, very important information to know, because that's your livelihood. That's how you're going to survive the winter.
In 2021, what is the main age group purchasing the Almanac?
We've definitely branched out, particularly with our use of almanac.com. But I'd say our main age group is probably, in the mid to late 40s, up through, 80, 90. that would probably be our main age group, but we're definitely expanding into some younger younger audience as well. And we also have a publication called The Old Farmer's Almanac for Kids, which we just came out with our Volume 9 this year. And that one is for anybody. It can be, any age group. It says for kids, but, I definitely enjoy reading the articles. And that one has more age-specific information and, fun, puzzles and games, as well as, articles about how to build things or, different little simple recipes and fun historical information.
Mm. Has the Almanac in all of its years ever appealed to a younger audience?
Yeah, definitely. That's just I was just talking about with the Old Farmer's Almanac for Kids. We're always trying to appeal to the younger audience. I think a lot of people who are in their our middle age or a little older probably remember the Almanac as being something that was around as a household item. It has that little hole in the corner. Usually you hang it from a little loop of string near the phone or in the barn, or if you have a barn, or it would hang out on the coffee table or in the bathroom. So a lot of people have that kind of nostalgic feel of the Almanac being around, but as time has gone on and the internet's become more popular, a lot of publications have a harder time competing with that, which is why we have branched out to do a little bit of everything to really meet everyone's needs, including our younger audience.
I guess what I'm saying is, because back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, I think younger people were probably more interested in the ag community. And I think they have probably moved away from the ag community as time has went on. I noticed FFA groups are less prevalent than they once were. County fairs are not as big for kids and animals as they once were. Do you think the Almanac appealed to a younger group back in those days than it would today, since the agricultural community is fading in a way with that group?
It has faded, but it's also changed. It's different now. So I agree with you that back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, it was definitely much more agricultural interest with younger people. But now it's called gardening, or it's called sustainable farming, or it's called permaculture. There's just a different label to it, but young people are extremely interested in learning how to homestead, how to grow food for themselves, how to survive off the land, how to understand the signs of nature to, be able to harvest their own food, raise cattle or raise sheep. And we have information about all that kind of stuff in here. And our gardening demographic, or people who are interested in gardening, doubled when the pandemic hit last year. I think because a lot of people had a lot more free time on their hands and they realized that, maybe I'll grow some food, I'm around. And that's continued into this year. And I think it's because people have realized that gardening is pretty awesome. And that's across all age groups. We've seen it with older people. We've seen it with younger people. So it's agriculture itself, as you said, county fairs, all of that stuff. Yeah, there is less of that. But it's just different now. Now we're going for small-scale farming and gardening.
It's very interesting that you say that. For the first time in my life, and I certainly am not 25 and under at this point, this year I planted a tomato plant. Now, that's no huge thing, but, living in an area that is not a big agricultural community and not having a big yard, it just seems appealing all of a sudden, and in all my life I've never done that before. I don't know what all of a sudden the appeal is of that to a lot of people.
I think that's great, and you got to start somewhere. Just doing one plant is actually a great way to start, because you can focus all of your energy into it and make sure it gets what it needs, because it can get pretty quickly out of hand. I think what appeals is there is this natural feeling that we are connected with nature, and in the way that our society runs, we're very often separate from that. We'll drive in a car, we'll be on a road, we'll get our food from the grocery store, We'll spend a lot of our time indoors, and that makes us feel like we're separate from our planet, from nature in general, but we're extremely interconnected with it. And when you start getting your hands in the dirt, when you start growing some food, you are definitely going to start feeling that connection to Earth, to the soil, and there's something very relaxing about that. We actually have done a few different articles in the past about, like, the joy of gardening and the, you know, the euphoric feeling of putting your hands in soil. And there's actually, like, a number of different, like, microbes and, chemicals that are in soil that make your brain release, like, serotonin and dopamine and, you know, just in the smell of the soil alone, not, you know, any of the actual experience of growing things. So I think there's a lot of different things to it, but overall, gardening is just fun.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Over the last 20 years, as the internet has really taken hold, how has it changed the Old Farmer's Almanac?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, over the last 20, 25 years, I think, you know, we got a website pretty early on in the late 90s to try and match up with it. Obviously, it looks way different. Our website looks very different than it used to keep up with the times. But I'd say what's changed the most is we have a huge, huge amount of information on our website. And that what I think is helpful about that is that we can be extremely specific to every single person's needs, including, like, weather information. If you want to look up literally, like, your zip code, your exact town, we'll have frost date information. We'll have, you know, when to plant peas in that specific area. We'll have information about the weather that's specific to that area. And, you know, all this very, very specific information. The almanac itself, the publication, you have to do some, you know, it's for Boston, all the information in here with a bunch of information on how to convert all of those times to your specific area. So I think what's kind of helpful is the almanac is kind of like a great guide to have, and then almanac.com is like a supplement that can really expand the information that we can give you.
Social media. I was just reading recently how social media spots are now some of the most popular, if not the most popular spots on the internet, even surpassing search engines at this point. Has social media changed the Old Farmer's Almanac?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, and we're Pinterest as well. And what really helps with each one of those is, you know, each one has a specific use and a specific kind of demographic that will be on it. So, like, you know, older generations you'll probably find on Facebook. We have a huge following on there, and we'll post, you know, pretty every single day, sometimes a couple times a day, with fun gardening information, historical information, recipes, and it, you know, it's really just about getting people engaged and having fun. We did like a seed giveaway contest earlier this year, so, you know, there's always something fun going on. Instagram will definitely have a slightly younger, probably millennial group. We haven't gotten onto TikTok yet, but I'm sure we'll get there eventually. And really, you know, each one just has its own use for getting information about the almanac out there.
It really is a changing world. And how many people work on the Old Farmer's Almanac staff?
So we're a pretty small staff. I'd say we're about 8 people on the editorial staff, 2 people on our web team, and I think 2 or 3 on the publication and distribution side. So, you know, we put out about 3 million copies a year of just the almanac itself. And, you know, it's pretty daunting. So everybody on the team is extremely useful and necessary to getting this out there.
How were sales last year during the pandemic?
They were actually pretty amazing. And I think that was, again, because majority of our content is about gardening as well as weather. But, you know, and gardening became a huge thing last year, more so than normal, and has continued to be extremely popular. And that's, you know, I mean, we're the Old Farmer's Almanac. We have tons of information on how to grow food. So
We're still in the midst of the pandemic. It certainly has not gone away. Has it impacted the Old Farmer's Almanac in any way? Is there anything in there in regard to the pandemic now that when you started to write and compile this year, it certainly was a known thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, we started putting the 2022 almanac together last August or so. So, yeah, it was definitely a known thing. And I believe we have an article about, you know, hygiene and how to wash your hands properly and, you know, a number of different small things like that. So we're really, you know, we're trying to give some information about the pandemic, but we're also trying to create something that, like, you know, makes people feel good and makes them feel happy and gives them a place to direct their energy that can be a healthy thing. So, like, that's what all the information in the almanac's about. It's about, you know, useful with a pleasant degree of humor. We're trying to get people to, you know, learn something and then kind of enjoy that experience, which I think is what we really need these days, is something that's, you know, with the pandemic continuing on, it's extremely difficult to get up in the morning and be like, all right, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and it's going to have meaning. I think it's important to acknowledge that things are very difficult. You know, very simple things are difficult these days. I think what our almanac does is, you know, give a space to really slow down and think about things in a more purposeful way and to, you know, get a little bit of joy in the day.
You know, it has been one of the big topics of this pandemic as time has drug on, is are we happy? What joys do we have left? In the Old Farmer's Almanac, what things are going to make people laugh, feel good, so on and so forth in this year's edition?
So there's a number of different things in here. First of all, you know, like I've been saying, there's a lot of great gardening information. So we've got a really cool article about pumpkins that are totally bizarre looking. So, you know, like sometimes if you have a compost pile, if you've ever thrown pumpkin seeds in there, and you'll get like crazy gourds and things coming out. Yeah, we've got some really funky looking pumpkins that I think will make you laugh, as well as some really beautiful articles about flowers, about dahlias, which will just make you really happy. I mean, if you ever want a little spark of joy, you can definitely grow some flowers. And then another one that's one of my favorite articles that we've been doing for a number of years is an article about farmers around the country. And what's great about this one is we interviewed a number of farmers from around the U.S. and Canada to talk to them about, you know, how they grow their food, what got them started, what are their difficulties, and really the idea is just to give a place for us to get to know the people who are growing our food, which, you know, has become more and more separate over time with the use of super stores and grocery stores, and you know, you won't see the people who are growing your food very often unless you go to a farmer's market. So this is our way of kind of like slowly introducing people to where, you know, where's that lettuce coming from? Where's that milk coming from? I think it's a really great article series.
Is there anything in its exact form that was in the original almanac that is in this almanac?
Oh, yeah, a good number of things. So in the original almanac, there were no color pages. We have a whole color section now, which I think really fleshes out the almanac. But what was originally in there was the weather predictions in pretty much the exact same form as they are now, and also the tabular pages, which include the left-hand and right-hand calendar pages. They look almost identical to what they used to be. And what's in that is that's like your sunrise and sunset times, your length of day, as well as like, you know, specific holidays, you know, like when's Easter, and different information about like the tides, when are high tide times, and how high is that tide going to be. Something else is the farmer's calendar essays, which is it's basically a short essay that's for every month of the year that is written by somebody who works on a farm or is a farmer and just talks about you know, their experience with living their life. It's kind of just like a little like so it's just like a little blog entry, I guess you could call it, but like more how they used to do it.
Are there any stories that were in the original almanac or any anything that are exactly the same that are in there today, an original story, an original anecdote that appears exactly the way it did in the original?
I'm not sure if there is an exact story, because we wouldn't want to be publishing the same exact, like, stories every year. And all that information that I was just talking about, that is the same. It's updated every year for the current year's information. It just looks like the same, you know, kind of tables and format. So I'd say there isn't anything in here that is exactly, like, word for word the same as it was in the original almanac. But that's a good thing, because, you know, things were a little different in 1792.
Was there a period of time where the almanac sold best? Was there just a period in history?
I'd say a really good time period was probably late 1940s and 50s. I think it was extremely popular. You know, the economy was starting to pick up again post-World War II, and, you know, a lot of people were actually able to, like, buy houses and land and grow their own food again after the devastation of the war and the, you know, the whole infrastructure of the United States was kind of in shambles after, you know, being all set up to, you know, make bullets and planes and things like that. So I think the almanac did really well then, because people were trying to get back to what they considered to be normal, to living their life, to growing. So I think it did really well then, but it's also doing really well right now. And I think it's kind of that same feeling of like, you know, there's some really scary things going on, and where can we find comfort? Where can we find something that's going to, like, be a structure to our life? And I think the almanac has always been that steadfast, like, you know, no matter what's going on, we're here.
What is the cost of this year's almanac? It's already on sale, and where can people most likely find it?
So you can get the almanac for $7.99, and it is pretty much anywhere that you can find books or magazines. So, you know, any big stores, any bookstores, any local bookstores. We also sell to smaller bookstores. And you can also go online to our website at almanac.com/where-to-buy, and you can type in your zip code, and it'll give you a list of stores that you can find in your area that it will be selling at. You can also just go to amazon.com, and you can get a copy there.
Mm. We have about 17 minutes left this morning with Ben Kilbride, the assistant editor of the 2022 edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac. And, of course, we have to get to the weather here in Ohio as we head into November. Now, last year's winter was pretty cold, a lot colder than winters we had had in the past. We got some snow, a couple snowfalls, nothing huge. On Christmas Eve, we did get a snowfall last year, which gave us a white Christmas here, certainly in this area and most of Ohio last year. As we head into the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, where the Old Farmer's Almanac picks up in November, what do the holidays look like?
Yeah, so you guys are in right on the border of two different regions, Region 6, which is the Lower Lakes, and Region 7, which is the Ohio Valley. So you kind of get like a mishmash of predictions. But overall, particularly around Thanksgiving and Christmas, you're going to be looking at colder weather again than normal, so probably pretty similar to this past winter, as well as more snow overall. And there is definitely going to be some snow around the end of November, so potentially right around or right after Thanksgiving, and then definitely in the middle and end of December, so you're going to be looking at another white Christmas, I believe.
Now, when it comes to temperatures, temperatures have been very interesting. I don't think our cooler temperatures hit until January. We have had some of the most unseasonably warm Novembers and Decembers in the last 5 years that I've ever seen in my life, and for that matter, people older than me have ever seen. We had a Christmas Eve a few years ago when it was 70 degrees. That was unheard of in Ohio.
Yeah.
But what are we looking at temperature-wise?
So temperature-wise, let's see, in Yeah, in November and December, it is going to be slightly below average. So these are, when we say below average, the average temperatures are based on 30-year averages that are put out by the U.S. government. They just recently updated that to include the last 10 years. It's from 1991 through 2021. And the last 10 years are the warmest on record. So when I say that it's like 4 degrees below average in December, that is including those warmer years. So it's probably going to be similar to what you've been experiencing. Probably not going to get a 70-degree day on Christmas. But it's going to be slightly colder than normal, but normal is warmer now. So you have to keep that in mind.
You know, it's kind of interesting because we're coming off of summer here, the tail end of summer, and this summer was incredibly humid. Again, one of those odd summers where the humidity was unbelievable and still is somewhat unbelievable as we head into fall here. And temperatures were warm. We did have a pretty warm summer here, but that will beget a cooler winter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, that's what we're predicting for sure. And we, in the Northeast, we're over in New England here. We also experienced a pretty bizarre summer weather. We had a very warm and dry spring, followed by a cool and extremely rainy summer, and then in August, late summer, it turned very hot and humid, like you're talking about. So it's been all over the place, and it's very different than what we're used to. And I think that's going to continue to happen as climate change, progresses. We're going to get very different overall weather as well as more severe and frequent intense storms.
You know, it's kind of interesting because as the pandemic has come in for nearly 2 years now, we've almost stopped talking about all the other issues that we tended to talk about on a somewhat regular basis. And one of those was climate change, and a lot of times that becomes a political thing. But leaving the politics and everything out of it, what is climate change doing? What is it causing that we are noticing in 2021 and heading into 2022 with the weather?
So I should preface this with I am not a climate expert in any way, but as far as I understand, climate change is affecting overall temperature ranges in pretty much every part of the planet, making some areas colder than normal, some areas warmer than normal. For example, this past winter, there was the polar air that got pushed down into southern United States, into the entire Midwest, as well as far as south as Texas, where we had that flash freeze, and that is completely climate change created. And that was because as the planet warms overall, even just a couple of degrees Fahrenheit that it has, that creates imbalances in the polar vortex, which is this swirling circle of air that circles the northern hemisphere and over the further north. And what happens is that imbalance of the warm air pushes up into that circle of air, and it makes it get wobbly. The polar air starts to push down in these big swoops. 3 years ago in New England, we experienced a pretty bad flash freeze where it got very, very cold for about 3 weeks, colder than normal. And then this year, as far south as Texas, experienced worse than that even. And it's going to create more problems as time goes on, because a lot of these places, like Texas, weren't prepared for that kind of, they don't have the infrastructure for dealing with temperatures like that. Their houses aren't built for it. They don't have the insulation to protect their pipes from breaking. So there was flood damage all over the place. Their electrical grid wasn't ready to handle the influx of energy as people were trying to heat their homes. So that shut down, as well as ice forming on power lines and things. So it's we're going to be having more extreme weather all over the place, and it's going to be in places that aren't used to that kind of weather. that's what you're going to be looking for, and that includes, you know, stronger hurricanes. We're going to be seeing, you know, more tornadoes. We're going to see, you know, colder temperatures as well as hot spells like we saw throughout the entire Midwest this summer, where it got extremely, extremely hot in the hundreds in places that should only be experiencing, you know, highs of 90s, like in the Pacific Northwest. They're just not used to it. The animals aren't used to it. It's kind of scary.
You know, I was told recently in the last couple of years that by a climate expert that if we don't do something about this fairly quickly, that it's going to be irreversible. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that is definitely, I agree with that. It's kind of coming to a head here where if something doesn't get changed pretty soon, we're not going to be able to reverse the effects. And as at the point that we are at, you know, we're not going to get weather like we used to. We can't reverse what we're experiencing now. This will be the normal, but we can stop it from progressing. And that's really what we're hoping to do. And really, you know, as average people, there isn't as much as you can do as you know, as I would hope. Most of it is on big corporations and, you know, the extreme rich, which are creating these imbalances, this the polluting of our planet most significantly. So, you know, what you can really do is talk to those corporations. You can talk to your lobbyists. You can talk to your politicians and really try and get the information out there and say that you're interested in seeing a change. Because the more that, you know, we're all on the same page, the more hopefully we can get people to listen.
Are you surprised that over the years, because it's very interesting that the pandemic has become political. I don't know if a lot of people would have thought that in the beginning, or certainly the vaccinations. But are you surprised that almost since the beginning of climate change conversations in this country on a large scale, which is probably about 30 years now, that it is political, that that is a political issue?
Historically, we, the Almanac, we stay out of political issues because that's not what we're really about. We're about the weather. We're about, you know, growing food. We're about traditional, you know, homesteading. We're just about surviving, about living your life and knowing, you know, how nature works and all of that. So we don't really look at it as a political issue. It's more of a fact. And you know, that's you know, we predict weather and we're looking at the weather and we're seeing the changes that are happening. You know, like I said, we have 230 years of weather predictions under our belts and we have never seen anything like what we're seeing now. So we don't really like to get into political issues. That's not what we're trying to do, but that is what we're seeing.
As we head into 2022 in our particular area, we'll have snow showers in November and December, a little more than we have in recent years, and temperatures will be a few degrees cooler than they have been. January, February, and March seem to be the most depressing weather months of the year in this area. Not a whole lot going on. It gets very cold. That's when we tend to see the most snow. What do January, February, March going into Easter of 2022 look like?
Yeah, so January definitely is much colder than normal, and a lot more snow overall throughout the entire month. February is going to be about average, with a little rain, a little snow. And then March is actually going to be a little warmer, slightly warmer than average temperatures, and not a lot of snow or rain. Mostly sunny weather with a little bit of snow in the middle. And then April is also warmer than normal, so looks like, you know, you'll probably be getting out of like the severely depressing temperatures a little faster than normal.
When you talk about January being colder and more snowfall, what does it look like?
So when I say, you know, colder than average, we specifically say 7 degrees below average. So the average temperature for the entire month is about 20 degrees. So, you know, that since it's an average, it'll get, you know, it'll definitely get below freezing and get into the teens and anything that you've normally seen. But just overall, that's the average. And if you're looking for when the snow is happening, it's going to be a little bit in the beginning of the month, first through the 6th, then the 7th through 11th, it's going to get a little snowier, and then the 12th through the 16th, it gets colder, and also more snow showers mixed in there, and then, yeah, pretty much the entire month, it's snowy and fluctuating between mildly cold to very cold.
And when we come out of this in the summer of 2022, are we looking at a particularly warm summer, a cool summer?
You're going to be looking at a warmer and rainier than normal summer. So it's probably going to be similar to what you experienced this past summer with more humidity and more overall just, you know, a wet heat.
What has happened to spring? It seems like we still have fall in this area, but we come off March, which is typically a cool month. We come off of March, it seems like. We even had a snowfall this past year in April. And then it just kind of lingers around, and we really don't have those 70-degree days anymore. And all of a sudden, it's hot.
Yeah, we experienced something similar to that. It's not really sure what's going on with that. Like I said, you know, there's a lot more bizarre things happening that are hard to explain. But, you know, I think it's just the transitional period is just happening more quickly, which can be kind of disrupting to a lot of the natural processes of nature. You know, it's the different animals that are migrating back, different birds, as well as, you know, creatures that are coming out of hibernation. I think they're coming out a little bit sooner than normal because, you know, yeah, that slow transition isn't really happening as much anymore. It's kind of like, it's cool. And then suddenly, you know, we're getting 80-degree days for like a couple weeks, that can be kind of hard on the natural world because they're not prepared for that.
In our last 5 minutes here, because I always think it's important to do this every year, tell us how this all got started. Tell us about the man Robert B. Thomas.
Yeah, so Robert B. Thomas was just your average farming man from 1792, which, to give you a little bit of perspective, is when George Washington was president, just to give you an idea of the span here. Robert B. Thomas really saw that there was a need for an almanac with good weather predictions, because, like I said earlier today, almanacs were extremely important to the welfare of pretty much every person around. They needed those weather predictions to know when to plant their food. And what he had a knack for was predicting weather accurately. And what he did was he would look at sunspots on the sun, and the correlation between that and the weather that we have on the planet is pretty clear. So the sunspots are essentially geomagnetic storms on the surface of the sun. They appear as like little tiny black dots on the surface of the sun, and the more of those that you see, the more influence it has on the weather on Earth. Right now we're in a period of time where there are fewer sunspots overall, so we see less influence on the planet's weather. So he used that information to create an almanac with very accurate weather predictions, and because of that, his almanac was able to stick around and gain popularity throughout his entire lifetime. And he was the editor through, I think it was like 1856, when he passed away. So he lived a long and full life where he was able to see the almanac grow into something extremely popular.
Was he an eccentric man? Was he a community-minded man? Was he a wealthy man, a middle-class man?
So, you know, there's not like a ton known, but he was, I think, what you would consider now to be middle-class, but at the time would probably be a little bit more upper-class, because he, you know, he owned his own land, he had his own farm, and he was fairly, you know, he was wealthy enough to be able to start a publication like this, to be able to get the materials to print something like this, which were not as common as you would be able to find now. You know, not everybody knew how to print. Not even everybody knew how to read at the time. So, yeah, middle class.
Is there a story in the history of the Farmer's Almanac, Old Farmer's Almanac, which dates back to George Washington's era, where maybe a president or a well-known historic figure either really promoted the almanac or followed it heavy or mentioned it a lot that we would know of?
I'm not sure specifically about that, but I do have a good story where during World War II, the U.S. government was actually worried that that Nazi Germany was using the almanac predictions to predict what was going on in the United States, to the weather patterns and things like that. So, and they looked at the almanac as a accurate enough source of information that it was actually a real worry. So the U.S. government actually tried to prevent the publication of the almanac for a couple of years during World War II, but our editor at the time and the entire staff, they didn't let that happen. They continued to publish it regardless, and I think they were smart to do that, because I'm not sure there was much that the Nazis could have gotten out of it. But it's just kind of an interesting story that it was considered important to be considered a threat to our national security.
That is very interesting. With 60 seconds left to go, we know we go to it for weather, but what are people going to find in the 2022 edition?
So in the 2022 edition, you're also going to find tons of information about gardening, from basics to more expert level stuff, as well as recipes and astronomical information and sports and history and so much more. And really, you're going to have to pick up your own copy to see what I'm talking about, because there's a ton of stuff in here.
The 2022 Old Farmer's Almanac is on sale now. You will find it. Trust me, go to stores, checkout lines, small stores. You will find it. You can also find it online. And we enjoy this yearly visit. And until next year, assistant editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac 2022 edition, Ben Kilbride, we thank you for joining us, and we look forward to next year.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Ben. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. All you ever wanted to know. We'll be back in 15 minutes with a lot of information about events going on last night in Marion.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address, 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number, 740-387-3255.